Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Jackie Hendry, in today for Lori Walsh. As we watch pain and injustice play out once again on the national stage, it can be difficult to know what to say or what to write. You know it, I know it, and Kevin Wooster knows it. He writes the blog On the Other Hand, which you can find on sdpb.org. Kevin joins us now by phone. Hi, Kevin. Welcome back to In the Moment.
Hey, Jackie. It's always good to be back.
Well, where do you want to begin?
I want to begin. Let's talk about fishing. No, much easier intro there.
Right.
You know, I think when you and I kind of touched base yesterday, it got me to thinking about something I've struggled with, you know, for the last 2 weeks plus, and that is, what do I have to say? And, you know, a lot of instances, if there's something going on with COVID here or something going on in Sioux Falls or Rapid, or if there's a historical thing about the legislature or a current thing, I feel like I got a lot to say. Mm. What does a white 68-year-old male in western South Dakota really have to say about George Floyd and the way this is all played out across the country? I mean, do I have standing, and is there anything that I can add to this that wouldn't be repetitious or superficial or self-serving or self-indulgent? That's the thing you struggle with, and I would guess you line reporters that are doing it every day. You know, I do it kind of when I feel like it and the way I feel like it, but I would guess that's a struggle, although I think I mentioned to you that at least you have breaking news to cover, and I don't do so much of that breaking news stuff, so I don't have that inroad. So I'm, theoretically anyway, I'm supposed to come into it with kind of a broader, more philosophical look, and I just can't find a broader philosophical look right now that means anything to me, and it's a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not there yet.
Right. Right. Of course, we are in the end two white people having this conversation.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I will say, kind of in this, you know, I spend a lot, perhaps too much time on social media and things like Instagram, and that connects me to friends back home and people around the world. And I see folks on addressing the white people in their lives. Some of them say, be quiet and listen to us and don't center yourself in this conversation. Other folks say, speak up about what you see that's wrong. And other folks still saying, you know, have these conversations with other white people, because I think the last quote I saw was, until white supremacy becomes a problem to white people, it will continue. And then as you find yourself as a journalist, sometimes that's where's the balance? I think we had in our email exchanges, how do you balance an appropriate amount of rage at the world around you with your professional duty to be impartial and state the facts?
Yeah, that's a complicated thing, because, you know, over 40-some years of reporting, my level of outrage reduced, you know, and because I always seemed like I was outraged about something all the time when I was a young reporter, and I was going to do something about this, and I was going to fix that, and I was going to, you know, get to the bottom of that. And that's important. It's important to have that emotion and that drive and that sense of outrage. But it's easy to be over-outraged on all these subjects, on the COVID thing, the way it was handled. On Donald Trump, he's a guy that incites outrage, you know, and he likes to incite. And on this, how can you not feel a sense of rage, even if you are just a white guy in western South Dakota, far removed from what black people deal with in, you know, every state, including this one, but all across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And how can you not be outraged about that? But as a professional reporter, especially somebody doing the day-to-day work every day, how do you control that and funnel that and set that aside? Because you have your personal self, and you can afford to be outraged as in your personal self situation, but in your professional self, the outrage can really get in the way. And frankly, I've seen some, I think, across the country where outrage has gotten in the way of some reporting. And I understand it. It's a difficult balancing act.
Mm-hmm. We've also chatted a little bit about how you were you were having lunch and thinking to yourself about your friend Keith, who we've talked about on the program in the past, who passed away recently. And as you were in that space, you got a text from your son Casey. Tell us a little bit about that. Yeah. How that scene played out for you.
Yeah, and I went to that to the place, the outdoor campus here, this nature center in Sioux Falls, for my friend Keith, who was a naturalist there, a great guy, a great outdoorsman. And I was there having lunch by myself with memories of him and the place and looking around at things. And when I got home, you know, and I was thinking about how important it is for us to not forget people, not forget important people in our lives. And when I got home, my son had sent me a text saying he'd been to the spot where George Floyd had been killed and had taken my granddaughter and my grandson, you know, 7 and 5, and with them, because he thought it was important that they began to understand, although, you know, how much understanding it can have at this point, but that it was important that he be there with them and with the others that were there. And it occurred to me that something was going on there between us that I couldn't really understand, both of us feeling, both of us swimming in this same DNA pool, somehow feeling that we had to reach out to someone important who had died. That someone that was very close to me, that I knew very well, and someone that my son didn't know at all. But suddenly now all of us feel like he is very close to us, and his death is very personal to us. And I think there's a way to write that. I haven't figured out how to write it yet, and in a meaningful way. But I do think, and maybe you do too as well, that this is getting back to what you'd seen online on some social media site about us sharing in this, and it's important for all of us that are in the right way to share in it. This is a shared loss that... It's one of the kinds that stand out, I think, and will stand out in a meaningful way. And I think that was kind of what that moment for me on a personal level showed us, that these points of loss matter in our life, and we need to use them in ways that are important as we move ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll share a bit of my own story just as a way of asking you for yours. And also selfishly, because I need a more seasoned journalist than me to tell me how to do this. But as I reflect on why I decided to go into journalism in the first place, in part it was led by I liked to write, and I needed a slightly more regular paycheck than being a novelist, so I thought journalism would be just as good. But then also as a young teenager, coming through South Dakota for the first time, my family and I were out in the Black Hills, and we went to Crazy Horse, and that was in many ways my first exposure to Native histories and cultures and injustices. And that sparked for me that sort of, you know, youthful rage, as you kind of talked about. And really that drove me to journalism, because I thought... people don't understand the truth, and people should know when bad things are happening so that they can act differently. So in many ways, a sort of racial injustice, or this idea of social injustice, drove me into journalism, because I wanted to document it and make a difference in that way. So now I'm here, and I find myself struggling, because is this the place to do that? And I think it depends on who you ask. I'm wondering if that's something you've run into in your career, of the kind of circling back to that idea of balancing, and you say that rage kind of diminished over your career. And I'm just wondering how you act on that desire, and seeing the value in the truth of journalism, but wondering how to balance those things.
Yeah, I don't think I could have survived if that rage hadn't diminished a little bit over the years, because it was burning hot early on. And I think we all want to have an effect on things, and we all want to bring change. I think that motivates most of us to get into journalism, that we feel like we can have an effect on the world around us, hopefully in a positive way. Mm-hmm. And that softens a little bit, the edges round off a little bit. you hope not too much. I had a young reporter when I was still at the Journal full time in a debate we were having, and he said, "The problem with you reporters is that you're older reporters," and he happened to be from another country, "is that you're afraid to tell the truth." Hmm. And my argument was, I'm not in the truth business, I'm in a fact business. And if you present the facts as well as you can, as clearly as you can, and as accurately and fairly as you can, the truth will emerge. Hmm. I don't think we have to decide to tell the truth. I think we have to commit to telling the facts, and the truth will become apparent to all of us, the readers, the viewers, the listeners, and ourselves. And I think the danger is that going into something, how I say one of the great things about journalism, along with the writing, which, as my friend said, if I didn't have a reporter job, they'd have to shoot me. I can't do anything else. Is the joys of writing and the joys of reporting and the joys of going out every day with the privilege of finding out what you didn't know and learning things that you didn't really understand. And you know, that's one of the wonderful things about it, is finding out that things are more complex than maybe you thought they were. And maybe the truth you thought you had at 7:30 in the morning isn't the truth that emerges by 5 in the afternoon if you've done your job well. Mm-hmm. That's the only advice I give. Just follow the facts and lead with the facts, and you'll find the truth always, I think.
Yeah. So many people conflate the two, facts versus truth. What distinguishes them to you?
Well, is it true that Donald Trump is a bad president? There's a truth there. Some people would say absolutely not. And you can point to things that maybe are good about the economy or good about things like that and say, sure he is. Is it true that he's a bad president? Well, when you look at the division in the country that's worsened, and the way people talk to each other, which has worsened, and the way he talks to people, you can certainly say it's true that Donald Trump's a bad president. History will tell us more about those truths and what one is the central truth. And you can take that approach to just about any argument over the truth. And as you know, any story has many truths in it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those truths are conflicting. And so when you get in the business of being a truth teller rather than a fact presenter, you are almost always going to get yourself in trouble sooner or later. It doesn't mean you can't believe in truths. It means you have to always subjugate what you think is the truth to what you know are the facts. And it makes your job hard, and it makes your job wonderful, I think.
Yeah. What's the good news in all of this?
Well, the good news is that there's change coming already in police departments across the country. There's good news in the way some people are approaching this. Most people, I think, are demonstrating. Most of it is peaceful, and most of it is positive. And there's a good news that you and I, a couple of white people, are having this conversation, and other white people and I are having this conversation. And there's still a lot to do. I mean, if you look at, you're probably aware of the story of suddenly we realize something that I'd forgotten, I think I knew from before, that came up once, that in our own town of Gettysburg, the emblem, the Confederate flag, is part of the police emblem. And oddly and strangely, and maybe not accidentally, George Floyd's uncle, Selwyn Jones, is in Gettysburg. He used to live here in Rapid. Now he's in Gettysburg and is a businessman who's concerned about that emblem. Hmm. And, we've got the stories, and the mayor there is saying that it's got a historical context, the name Gettysburg, the founders of the community. Well, I'm in kind of a philosophical reporter's mode now in my semi-retirement. And let me give you some advice, Mayor Bill Wittke. Change the emblem, because you're going to change it sooner or later anyway. Hmm. And Selwyn Jones can make a phone call tomorrow and have 500 protesters in your town by the weekend. I don't think you want that. And if there are certain things that you can make good news by doing that as a leader of a community, and if it's inevitable, why not avoid the conflict? But I hope we're going to see a lot of good news like that, changes made in our communities and in communities across the country, I hope.
We only have about a minute left or so, and I'm not sure where to leave it with you today, Kevin, but...
Well... in a state of confusion. How about that? Uncertainty.
Yeah. I will say I'm looking forward to whenever I do end up out west, and maybe I'll take you up on that fishing trip one of these days, because that sure sounds nice right about now.
Well, yeah. And you know, that the good thing that I have is I have more time to eat away and consider things outside of that daily rush, that hair on fire thing that you folks are all engaged in. You know,
right.
I can pretend to be more philosophical, I guess.
you have the time to perfect the performance of philosophy.
Yep. As I like to tell people, I have to prepare to go on the radio and appear to be smarter than I really am. So, yeah.
Well, my guest has been Kevin Wooster. You can find his blog, On the Other Hand, at sdpb.org. That's under the tab Explore. Kevin, thank you for your time and your thoughts today. It's helped me out in some ways. I hope it helps other people too.
Well, it's helped me just talking to you. Thanks, Jackie.